All right, welcome. Hearing from the with the Agriculture Veterans Affairs Finance Committee. Welcome everyone on this rainy day. We're not going to be in the fields for a while. Representative Anderson confirmed what we all know, and that we're getting a lot of rain. So if you're down south, it's even more. I heard up to 9 inches in the Mankato area. So a lot of flooded basements and water running across the roads, I guess. And in fact, some people like Hamilton and others that were going to be here called and said because of weather and other issues they're having on their in their areas or at their work sites or whatever that they're not going to be able to make it like some of them thought. So we're going to go with what we got. And again, I welcome people. There's coffee up there, I think. It's getting blacker by the minute, so I don't know what time it was made this morning, but it's ready to go if you need that. And shut your cell phones off. $1 if it rings, $5 if you answer it. That's the rules. They still hold even in the interim. Members and guests, the reason we're having this hearing is to review possible bonding projects that may be before us next year. If you've been tracking gubernatorial candidates, like I can't imagine anyone in this room that isn't, although there are people that aren't tracking them. Someone asked me, this is honest to God, I mean, I'm not going to get into elections in a partisan way, but someone asked me the other day, who's running for governor? Seriously, that was like 2 days ago. So while you all think you're connected to everything, there's a lot of people in our districts that there's other things on their mind besides fall elections. But that said, I've heard all the three candidates that are running INCL that they're interested in a bonding bill of one way, shape, or form, or one size, or another size. And I think that's good. And I think, you know, we remember last year the projects that didn't make it to the finish line or the vetoed projects or some of the things that went on. I think a lot of those are ready to go. And I think all the candidates are interested, if they get elected, in moving a bonding bill, even though it's an off year. With that in mind, I think it's proper that we as a committee, and particularly as legislators out around the state, give notice that we too are interested if there's a bonding bill. And if you get an opportunity to talk to these candidates, or if you get an opportunity to talk to your constituents now prior to next session, I think it's appropriate that, you know, like I say, number one, we put notice out there that we're interested in doing some of this stuff, and number two, that we are going to do it. All right? This isn't just fooling around stuff. We're going to be ready to go in January if there is a bonding bill set before us. So we'll talk about more individual projects as folks come up to discuss them here. By the way, the rest of the day, we were going to have a two-day tour, but because of folks' schedules, you know, there were only a few of us that were available for tomorrow, so we kind of shut down tomorrow's tour, but today we will be heading out to the university, and that's for all staff in the room. Senate staff is here, House staff and others, as well as all members, Department of Agriculture, anyone's interested. John Burns from the university is working on, we were going to do some plot tours, but I did call AJ yesterday and said, what do we do when it's going to rain? Because they said 100% chance of rain. I've never heard that. You rarely hear that. And, of course, John, being the optimist, said, no, I'm not sure it's going to rain. I think we might be okay. And but if it does, we've got alternate plans. There's a lot of indoor space at the University of Minnesota St. Paul campus. And I think it's good for us. We're going to go over there and catch up on what they're doing, take a look at what goes on that campus, and refresh our memories on that, too, as long as we're all in town. There'll be some dinner available for people that come after that tour about 5 o'clock. And what time's the tour start? Two. So we're over there from about 2 to 5. And there's we'll get you directions and other things to get over there, or you can hook a ride with someone, carpool, and we'll come back here. For members and others that want to eat over there, we're going to have a 5 o'clock meal. Then you're welcome to head home. For those that came a long distance, we'll certainly pay your travel day tomorrow to go home, or if you came in yesterday or whatever. So fill out your expense sheets, and if it's 1 or 2 days or whatever you need down here, we'll take care of you. So we want you around to this afternoon and for dinner. I think it's a good opportunity to interface with that community over there also. So any questions on the day's schedule? Seeing none. I know the Department of Veterans Affairs asked to go first, and welcome them up right now to give us an update on the Veterans Cemetery study. And again, we know there was a study, most of us, but what we want to do, I did hear that phone. I don't know whose it was, but I did hear it. Cheney? No? Okay. Whoever it was, they ran out. We'll stare at them when they walk in. There was a study. We know that, and I guess what we're looking for, I'm going to prod him a little bit before he starts, but what I'm looking for by the time you're done here in the next 15 or 20 minutes or whatever it takes you is an update. I guess I'm calling it the Four Corners update, because the study really indicated there is a need for some veteran cemeteries. We've been working on one, I believe, in northeast Minnesota for a couple of years. We had it cited, I think, in Senator Laurie's district at one time at a park, and we found out that the underlying soils and other things weren't compatible with it, and so I know we've been researching other areas up there. We'd like an update on that. I know southeast Minnesota, in Welty and Ropes and Davids and some of those districts, they've been trying to find a site, and I think they're making some progress. And again, the study called for a site there. Southwest Minnesota, same way. We had asked you to, and what spurred my memory is I actually drove by Fort Ridgely the other day. I drove into the place and took a look. There's actually a cemetery there already. So I know that works, but we're wondering where that Southwest facility is coming. And then Northwest, too. We talked about a partnership with the Indian tribes up there who are going to very interested up by Manoman and other areas to work with our department on developing a tribal and a veteran kind of joint facility. So I guess we're looking for that four-corner update from you, and one of the reasons we put it on today is in the there was some bonding language a couple years ago for purchase of land. There's a possibility we may have to do some bonding language in a bonding bill if it came up this year. Certainly our alternative is not to bond if we can find land that's available that's already publicly owned or that can be donated, but certainly we want to be prepared if that happens in a bonding bill. So that's why we've asked them to come today too and give us that update and see what we might need to do come January. So welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed any way you see fit.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. For the record, my name is David Swantek. I'm the cemetery director at our current state veterans cemetery in Little Falls. Happy to be here this morning and provide an update on what we've been doing since the end of the session. We have been working hard, as Representative Junkie indicates. Northeast Minnesota was kind of the first area that we really looked at for a new cemetery. It was part of the governor, one of the governor's veteran initiatives, mm-hmm. about 3 years ago, and we developed a partnership rather quickly with the DNR in looking for state-owned land for such a project up in the Duluth area. They came forward. We toured some sites, mainly within Jay Cook State Park, and located one of those parcels that appeared that it may work for a cemetery. Turns out the access into that property was a little too narrow for what our needs were, and after some lengthy negotiation with adjacent landowners, just to even acquire a strip of property to widen that access, we determined it was in our best interest to move on, and here we are moving on 3 years later. We've looked at, I would be comfortable in saying over 20 properties in the northeast region of Minnesota. It's a very, very difficult geology up there. It's bedrock, swamp, and you know there's parcels that we've looked at that are some of the most spectacular scenery that I've seen in the state up there. Unfortunately, with the cemetery development, that's only one small piece of the puzzle. It's what's below the surface that matters to us, because a tremendous amount of our development takes place from the surface down with burials, which is obvious. So we've run into a lot of search up there that has proven initially to look good, but when we dig into what the soils are, and all these are publicly owned land, a lot of tax forfeit land, a lot of DNR owned land, and we've worked very, very closely with the county of St. Louis County and also the city of Duluth. And they've been very, very helpful in identifying land that would possibly be available for this use. And I'm tempering my excitement a little bit, but I think we may have found something up there that might work. So we're digging into it. It's a piece of property that's administered by the DNR. And it may require a little bit of work to get it into our hands, but it looks like it's something that it's more positive than what I've seen in a long time up there. So, you know, we've kind of focused on that being the first one that we would like to get going, just because it's kind of been on our plate for the longest. And obviously we can't construct three or four cemeteries all at once, so... you know, for the Department of Veterans Affairs, you know, we'd like to see that one get off the ground first, and I think we're making strides to making that happen. The second area that we're looking at is down in the southwest part of the state. As Representative Junkie mentioned, the bonding bill 2009 appropriated $1.5 million for the northeast and the southwest projects, and it was basically money to provide for a design of the two cemeteries, and up to $500,000 of that could be used for acquisition of property. Obviously, we're working hard not to have to do that. We have executed a design contract for the design of both cemeteries, so we have encumbered a little over $1 million of that money for the design. We made a decision to get that contract executed in front of securing land so that when we do find property, we're ready to go. Our design team is on board. We got a great team in place. They're very familiar with national cemetery design and construction standards, having just completed the $25 million renovation at Fort Snelling National Cemetery. So these folks are... they're ready to go. They're beating our door down, wanting to get busy on these projects. So,
and that contract's already been awarded?
That has been awarded.
And to who?
Bunistro? Yeah, is a local firm here in St. Paul.
All right.
They have some subcontracts with some master plan firms and an irrigation firm, but it is a local firm. We'd been asked to continue our search predominantly with the DNR down in the southwest part of the state, and we have reached out to the DNR. They're very eager to help us. They've been very cooperative, and I think the place we're going to their initial contact back to us was, and we've reached out to their state parks director, and we're looking at Fort Ridgely. He also recommended the possibility of us looking at the Upper Sioux Agency State Park, which is near Granite Falls, which I think is, you know, it's not that far up the river from the Redwood County area, kind of opposite direction from Fort Ridgely. And then he also wondered about Miniopa down in Mankato. A lot of property down at Miniopa. My concern is that it's too close to the service area that's provided by Fort Snelling. The National Cemetery considers their service areas to be a 75-mile radius around an existing cemetery, and that radius of Fort Snelling gets awfully close to Mankato. And so we essentially would be dividing our service area in half, and I don't think that it would be wise for us to look that far towards that area. So we will be focusing on looking at those two parks. We've submitted to them a pretty extensive list of site selection standards that's put out by the National Cemetery Administration. And it lists out things like the proximity, how close is it to the largest veteran population that's considered to be unserved, what's the size of the acreage that would be available. We think that for our needs, we're looking for something where we can get about 40 usable acres. Now, 40 usable acres can mean it might take 120 acre parcel depending on what the conditions of the land are. So we've told them, you know, southwest Minnesota kind of agriculture, 60 to 80 acres would probably be a safe bet for us to be looking at. What's the shape of the property? We look for something that's not real irregular in shape. Rectangular, square is easier to develop. How accessible is it from the major highways that come through the area? It needs to be on a major paved highway. What's the surrounding land use? What are restrictions to development, topography, soils? And then, you know, last but not least are the aesthetics. You know, it's like I said, in Duluth, we looked at some just spectacular property, but that's not the driving factor. You can have something that's beautiful and just doesn't work for a need. So they're working off of this list and kind of locating parcels within those state parks that may work for us. And I'm anticipating within the next couple weeks of making visits down to the southwest part of the state.
That's what I was going to ask you next. When, you know, it does snow in Minnesota, and you want to come in ahead of that.
Right.
And, like I say, Representative Erdahl certainly and Torkelson probably and others from our area are very familiar with both the Sioux, Upper Sioux Agency and Fort Ridgely. I hadn't thought about the Upper Sioux Agency, but the Fort Ridgely site in particular, our bonding committee was out there. It's a real interesting site. I was out there again the other day. I just happened to be coming by, and the area they're talking about is an unused area up on top of the hill there, and it's right on the highway, and it's next to a horse camp, and there's camping available. Down below a little bit, I noticed driving in, there's already a cemetery there that's maintained, an older cemetery, but then, of course, you have the whole battlefield and everything else down there. It's a very interesting site when you think about putting a veterans cemetery, if it works there, because it would really be an addition to that that whole story that's told out on that site, to modern day veterans back to the old Sioux Wars. I think historically it'd be an interesting addition. And the Upper Sioux Agency, I'm sure there's lots of over by Granite there. There's probably a lot available there too. So I'm anxious to get you and your folks out on the site too, so you can get it visually in your mind what's out there and walk around those properties and take a look. So we want to get you out there before the snow flies. And again, and the reason is we want to make sure we're ready in January or February. If we have to do something legislatively, we don't want to be saying, well, you know, we hee-hawed around with the DNR and others and we didn't get out there and, you know, we think this might work, but now we're going to wait another year. Or, you know, I think it's time to move ahead on some of these. So,
Mr. Chairman, I agree. I'm just in the process of having to write another deferment letter to the National Cemetery Administration for these projects. They're competing very high on their priority list of projects across the entire United States. In fact, we've been in a position to have these projects funded for construction the last 2 years now, and I as well want to make sure this is the last deferment letter that I have to issue to them.
And I'll Representative Erdahl's got a question, but I will I'll volunteer his services. If you are having any difficulty getting what you need from the DNR in an expedited manner, Representative Eakin is sitting here, who's the chair of the Environment Policy Committee. I'm sure he'd be happy to make a couple phone calls from his office to make sure in a few weeks we're all ready to go down there together and take a look at some things if there's some work that they need prodding on. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the witness. Just wondering, if I missed this, I'm sorry, what percent of capacity is Fort Snelling at now?
I don't know for sure, but they've done their final expansion at Fort Snelling, and I believe they've created another 30-plus years of burial space there. So you drive in there, and it appears the cemetery's at capacity or near capacity today, but the way they've developed that new development, I don't think they're preparing to put that cemetery in a closed status anytime soon.
Okay. All right. Proceed.
All right. Mr. Chairman.
Welty's here. I'm sure you're ready to move into that southeast update as he walked in the
perfect
room.
Perfect timing.
And we're all paying attention to him now sitting down. And welcome, Representative Welty.
Thank you. There's just a little bit of rain in South
really?
Minnesota.
Really? Is that right? Okay.
Had a detour and a delay along the way.
Oh, my.
Southeast Minnesota is the third area that we've been looking at. We were asked to look at that area this past session. We don't have money in place to be able to pursue any design down there, but Fillmore County in particular has been very eager to donate a parcel of property for use for a cemetery. Started out, we had we met with their county commissioners down there last November, and at that time they were thinking of offering a 40-acre piece of land that they had available. We went out and looked at it. It's a beautiful piece of property along the Root River. And we told them, you know, and what we're finding is that 40 usable acres doesn't necessarily mean we get a 40-acre piece of property. Their eagerness has now turned into a donation of the entire parcel of property, which is 153 acres. I think that speaks volumes to their interest in this project. It's a valuable piece of property that they have down there. We have had our consultant go down and just take a peek at it. And, you know, from all indications, we haven't dug into it real extensively, but, you know, from an initial standpoint, it looks like it's something that could work for a cemetery. It's right off of Highway 52. So I think we have something in the works down there that could allow us to move a project forward in that part of the state as well.
So if we had something identified somewhere down there this winter, you're suggesting that we may need to look at seeing if we can get some design money then, because that hasn't been earmarked for design or development at this point, like the Northeast and Southwest.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. I think there may be a creative way to amend the language in the appropriation bill. As I said earlier, there's no way, we don't have the resources in our department to manage three major cemetery construction projects all at once. And for those of you that aren't aware, the design dollars that have been appropriated ultimately are refunded through the grant program. So we get those dollars back. You know, I think there's a possible way to have those refunded dollars roll to the next project.
Okay. Right. So, and we could work on some language with our Senate colleagues on that, perhaps in the bonding bill where the original language was. We can caress that so it maybe fits in the way we need it to. All right.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think we could make that work for as many cemeteries as we needed to construct where there would be no requirement for additional money. Northwest, we have had some limited discussions with the White Earth Tribe in Northeast Minnesota. We kind of outlined the way that these projects work. The State Cemetery Grants Program also will provide grants for establishment of state veteran cemeteries to tribal governments. We had a discussion with them, kind of outlined the parameters of that. I think they realized rather quickly that the perpetual requirements of operating a cemetery would be beyond what they would be able to take on. So I think their interest in having their own tribal government pursue a grant, that interest, I think, has gone by the wayside. But I think there are opportunities in Northeast Minnesota. We obviously have veterans that live up in that region of the state.
Northwest.
Yep. Yes, excuse me. Too many cemeteries here. Northwest, veterans that are at probably the greatest distance away from any open.
What is the closest cemetery going west into the Dakotas then too? Where would be the closest veteran cemetery? Because we would obviously serve some eastern North Dakota too, I would assume, up there.
Yeah, absolutely, Mr. Chairman, we would. You know, the Fargo-Moorhead area. There is an open state veteran cemetery in Mandan, North Dakota. And then, you know, beyond that really is Little Falls and at our open existing cemetery. So it would provide another option for veterans that live in those areas. Veterans that, you know, outside of that 75-mile radius, and we think it's even smaller than that, maybe 60 miles, they're not going to choose to, you know, very few of them are going to choose to be buried in a state veteran cemetery if they have to drive that far away. They're going to choose a local option. So, you know, being able to have the state offer them this as a benefit in all regions of the state, I think would be a, you know, just a tremendous expansion of our program, which has been, you know, very, very successful. And it's something that we look forward to offering all the veterans of our state, not just central Minnesota or the metro area. So that's all I have.
Any questions for our witness before we let him go? It's been a good update. I'm excited at the way you're progressing, and hopefully get some more work done this fall now before we get to session. So at least on the two areas where we've appropriated money, perhaps there can be some discussions come January on how we're moving ahead, at least in Northeast and Southwest, and then again firming up somewhat in the Southeast if we can. And again, continue to work, I think, with Representative Eakin and others from the Northwest on their ideas and how they might partner with some of their folks up there too, because I think there is a big gap up there, and it's one of the things I think we've become aware of on this committee and others is, you know, we want to treat all areas of rural Minnesota the same and make sure we have those services, particularly for veterans, available across the state. And a cemetery is certainly a service that I think is laudable and one that we should look at in Northwest. And again, serving East, Grand Forks and Fargo-Moorhead. I mean, I think there's some population centers up there too, Crookston. I mean, that certainly have a number of veterans who are aging veterans too, and those services perhaps will be needed. So, Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How about Eastern South Dakota? Do they have anything to? They have to go to Rapid City to go.
Mr. Swantek.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, no, the South Dakota, they are probably the leading state out there right now with tribal governments pursuing grants with the federal government. But South Dakota has one cemetery, and that's a national cemetery, and it's in Sturgis. So, so nothing on that side of the state.
Possibly our Southwest would serve kind of the Sioux Falls area, too, if they had a notion to come. It's not that far from where we're talking about. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, and I'm concerned too about the gap up there, and wanted just a little bit more, I guess, on efforts that have been made with the tribe. Are there specific sites that are being looked at? It seems to me that there was a site up by Bemidji that was being considered that would be kind of a central location in that northwest region, and land that they were looking at using that would have been adequate as far as the amount of land and a good location. Could you give me any more information on that?
Mr. Swante.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I have not had, we've had some informal contact with, I believe it was a county government official, but I've had no submissions of any land proposals of any kind to my office directly. So, you know, very preliminary discussions have taken place, you know, and the Northwest region, again, we have to be careful where these radiuses get created and how they overlap with Little Falls and Duluth and, you know, trying to pick up as much veteran population as we can in the Northwest. Obviously, the population being more spread out up there makes that a little bit more challenging as to where you place that circle to encompass the largest number of veterans that we could serve up there. And so, you know, once we'll be exploring that further, you know, I've kind of done a lot of the demographic analysis in my office where we, you know, try to find the best or the ideal location for those. And we haven't spent as much time on the Northwest just because population-wise it is the smallest and it would rank the lowest on the priority list. With that being said, you know, we have an idea of what the veteran population is up there, and compared with other projects that are now competing on the priority list with the National Cemetery Administration, I'm confident that a project up there will also compete very well for funding. So I think once we can move forward with something up there, we're not going to have any problem securing funding for construction from the National Cemetery Administration in the Northwest.
Thank you.
Representative Ertl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first, I commend you for your efforts on something I think is very important to veterans. Just want to be clear, are you having one in each region of the state? Is that the plan? And would that be four cemeteries that you're contemplating? And when do you anticipate these projects being done?
Mr. Swantek.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, it would be four additional cemeteries in the corners of the state beyond what we have in Little Falls. I would have hoped we were opening a new cemetery this year in the Duluth area, but that just hasn't worked out. And it's not for lack of effort. We've spent a lot of time, and you know, I'm still tasked with operating the cemetery in Little Falls on a daily basis, which we had an increase of 26% last fiscal year in what we're providing there for burials. So, you know, we're with our resources, we're spending as much time as we can because these are important projects. You know, as I mentioned, I don't want to, beyond what I'm going to have to do this week, I don't want to issue another deferment letter to the federal government. So my goal is to next year be underway with construction for one of these, and then, you know, ideally we could knock them out each year thereafter.
And I think that's a good way to look at it. And we're going to look at this as a four corners project, Representative Erdahl. And until we get all four corners done, the project isn't done. So, you know, I don't want one of them to get lost in the future and we move on to other projects as far as cemeteries go. I think it's wise to kind of group them and call it the Four Corners Veteran Cemetery Project, and let's get all four corners done. So, anything else? All right. Thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to bring up, we're going to switch gears here to agriculture, and dairy is up first, followed closely by turkeys. Any other animals that want to be a part of this? Okay, dairy.
Come on, Bob.
Dairy. Who's, anyone want to talk about the dairy project? You all dressed up. You look pretty nice. I figured someone wanted to come up.
So. Program to tell the truth.
Yeah. Everyone's kind of welcome to the committee. I guess you get to start, and then you can call anyone else up you want. You can put them on the spot too while you're up there. If you introduce yourself and proceed, I guess we'll start from there.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
I'll give you some grief right away. I thought you were going to have a nice presentation with pictures of cows and barns and some of this put down, but I guess you were too busy at Dairy Days on the farm out in Candiwai County to do that this week. Representative Erdahl, they were out, and we had about 80 people show up for dinner the other night on a dairy farm. It was a good, and Representative Lilly came out and learned a little bit about cows and where milk comes from and all that kind of stuff, so... Yeah, well, he didn't.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
We had Representative Abler and Representative Hortman to Litchfield.
So we're making connections with our Twin City cousins daily, or trying to. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bob LaFave. I'm the Executive Director with the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. Thanks for the opportunity to talk with you today about... specifically the dairy research facility. First, starting off, brief history from our standpoint at Minnesota Milk. We began looking at the possibility or the needs for building or adding to or increasing our academic assets for the dairy industry in 2002-2003. We were hearing from dairy producers at that time that we have some very good and very capable people resources, faculty and researchers and so on and so forth. But we were very limited on the ability to help sustain that level in future years. We started our discussions with the University of Minnesota at about that time, and we continue to have discussions with them up to this day. And at that point, a little bit of history, I think everyone probably knows, you know, up until the early 2000s, the dairy industry for three decades prior to that, we were that was going backwards. We were losing farms, losing cows, losing processors, losing nutritionists, losing dairy. I mean, the entire dairy infrastructure was going backwards. And so I certainly can understand why the University of Minnesota and perhaps the Minsky system were a little bit hesitant about why would we invest public resources in a new dairy research facility when the industry seems to be going away. Well, I'm very pleased to say that dairy producers have shown the leadership over the last 6 years where we've been increasing and enhancing and growing our dairy industry. We've been up in milk production. We've been up in cows each year for the last 6 years. I think dairy farmers have certainly shown that our industry is here to stay and it's going to grow. Unfortunately, we're at the point where if you're going to have a strong, sustainable industry, you need to have a strong academic institution. You need to have institutions that are there to be able to teach your next generation, that are facilities that are there to facilities and people, because we understand facilities are basically facilitate the research. But we need to have that in order for us to continue to grow. Otherwise, I think right now where we're at today is where we're going to end up being. We're going to continue to maybe see some growth, but we believe that we're definitely at the point. Really, I think AJ may have handed out a scoping document, actually, that we put together at the University of Minnesota's request over a year ago. And when we were in front of this committee last year, Dairy Day at the Capitol, one of our dairy producers, Greg Jans from Grove City, outlined some of the reasons why we believe from the dairy industry why it's important. But it's not just important for dairy producers and the rest of the dairy industry. It's certainly extremely important for the state of Minnesota when you're looking at an over $11 billion industry that supports nearly 40,000 jobs. It is definitely in the public's best interest to invest in research facilities and teaching facilities that will serve us long term. I want to touch on a couple of areas, I guess, within the University of Minnesota. I think, and perhaps they'll expand on that a little bit more. Recently, the University of Minnesota just closed their Crookston facility, so there will be no more cows up there in Crookston. Another relatively recent development, the University of Minnesota College of Vet Med had a partnership with a private dairy farmer, and where they built a state-of-the-art, it's an excellent dairy teaching facility. I would say we're going to be very fortunate to have, or we are very fortunate to have that, to teach our vets, our dairy vet students. But the challenge will be we need to make sure that we have dairy farmers and the rest of the dairy industry there. If we don't have dairy farmers, there's no need to have dairy vets. So we need to focus on the other aspects of the dairy industry, which comes back to a dairy research facility. I know the Department of Ag is going to talk about where they're at, and just to step back a little bit, again, I want to thank the chair and the committee for passage of a piece of legislation last year that asked the Department of Ag to prepare a report for you and have it completed by February 1 of this year, of next year, on the need for a dairy research facility and education, a dairy research, education, and consumer outreach facility, and take a look at potential funding options. We're pleased to say that Kurt Zimmerman at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has been doing an outstanding job of facilitating that work. So I'll leave the rest of that story up to Kurt Zimmerman. Really, from Minnesota Milk standpoint, these are all steps that are bringing us closer to the reality of having a new dairy research, teaching, and consumer education facility here in Minnesota. And it's a facility that will serve our industry for many years to come. We do believe that the facility should be a partnership with dairy farmers, partnership with other dairy industry stakeholders, and our academic institutions, the University of Minnesota on research and the Minsky system on teaching. The beneficiaries of this facility obviously are going to be dairy farmers, but it's also the rest of the industry, and most importantly, consumers. Consumers who are wanting to continue to have wholesome, quality dairy products that are produced in a way that helps to sustain our natural resources and provide proper animal care for our cows. That's what this research facility is about. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions that you have, and if you wanted me to invite others up, or
let me
want to proceed.
Let me give some vision from the chair here to begin with, and then we can invite other people up. And thank you for coming. And for those of you that don't have it, there's a paper up there, a handout. You should get your hands on it. Bob Lefebvre and his Minnesota Milk Producers put together what I think is a very good paper explaining what we're talking about. He hasn't gone through all of it here, but it goes into quite in-depth, as much as a short little white paper can here on some of the concerns of the dairy industry right now and why a facility may address that. Let me just back up a minute. We did put together a hands-on training facility with Davisco, I believe, in the New Sweden area a couple years ago, down by Lafayette, Nicolet, if you know where that area is. Representative Shaman, let's see, who's that? Morrow's area? I can't remember whose area, who represents that. That's a different facility than what we're talking about, because I've had that question from people, and we thank Davisco for that. Basically, what Davisco did is built an operating dairy farm, and then side-saddled it with some classrooms and others so that vet tech students and veterinary students can come out and get hands-on experience, AI experience and vaccines and all the things that, you know, birthing and other things that veterinary students need to know. The issue there is it's not really a research facility, number one, in that Davisco wants to make a profit from their cows out there. But research by its definition, you're not necessarily always going to make a profit. You hope to break even maybe with your herds, but some don't produce as well as others when you're doing checks and setting up your research experimentationally. That's number one. So this is a different facility than that one. Number two, I was fortunate, and you're right, it was 2002 or three. We took a ride on a bus, a bunch of Minsku people, some legislators, I think U of M people, certainly milk producers and others, and we went down to Northeast Iowa where they have one of these. What's the name of the town where it's at, Mr. Lefebvre? South of Luther College there on the highway.
Kalmar.
Sure. So not far over our border, there's a facility where they do, we were able to observe, it's a research facility. They have a herd there. They have classrooms on the site. They also have, and part of this, if you read the document, is a public outreach. They also have a dairy museum associated with it, so it becomes a destination for people just wanting to learn more about the dairy industry. But it was very interesting, so the idea was there, if Iowa can do this, I think Wisconsin has some similar form in different way, but certainly Minnesota should be looking at it. And so the reason we're not, you'll read this paper, and one of the criteria is in a dairy production area, certainly our biggest dairy production areas are southeast Minnesota and central Minnesota, but we're considering that southeast is probably served by that one in northeast Iowa right now, and we don't want to overlap or continue what they're doing, because there is access there to those farmers and students and other things in that northeast Iowa corner. But that said, I think this is an exciting project to start thinking about as we go. You know, I'm in all deference to our Wisconsin people, I am sick and tired of taking a second seat to Wisconsin when it comes to dairy, because I think we have a great dairy state. It's no different than Wisconsin weather-wise or, the availability of feed and everything else. Minnesota is good. We have seen growth the last 6 years. I think it is important to do some focus on our animal industry, and I think we all agree with that around the table. And so what I'm asking members here, as well as people in the audience, is to start thinking outside the box. What are the possibilities here? And as I drive up and down the road like you all do many, many miles on many, many days, you can think about this stuff. Dairy research, teaching and consumer education facility is what it says on top of that paper.
And I think all of those are important. Certainly the research, we understand that with our both our land-grant university as well as private folks that may have research needs that may be located on a site like this. But then the teaching aspect. In Candywike County, at Bridgewater College that Representative Szymanski and I represent in Wilmer and Hutchinson, we have dairy management classes there, as folks probably know. That's where our dairy management classes are in Minsku. Those classes are full. You can't get a seat in the class. And that is wonderful news. And about two-thirds of those folks are going back to the farm. They're young people that are going back to the farm to dairy. The other third is looking to go into the industry as middle management or consultants or filling those roles that companies need, dairy companies and those in our state that serve the dairy industry. So we've got an excellent base, I guess, in our dairy, in our Minsku system at this point, too. Again, the university has a herd yet in St. Paul, and they're doing some good research. I think we can expand on that, and it's exciting to think about it. But then the consumer education piece, I think, is interesting, too. I thought of this the other day. For example, and again, I want everyone to think about what the possibilities are. Local foods is going to be a big issue. We all know that. We all have farmers markets. We all have consumers that want to buy Szymanski apples locally. They don't want to see them coming from Washington State, right? And so nothing's more local than dairy. You know, dairy's a fresh food product, and that's a local food. But like Wisconsin and some other states, we see a lot of designer cheeses, on-farm production of those types of goods. You know, if in Minnesota, if you've got a family member now that wants to expand your operation and set up, the Paul Anderson designer Swiss cheese label that he's going to sell out there, where does Paul Anderson or his brother or his kid go to get that education? And maybe you show up at the Dairy Research Teaching and Consumer Education Facility. They have a two-week course where you check into the hotel and you stay there for 2 weeks and you learn all about setting up a cheese plant on your farm. It's a place that our consumers around the state could go. Or I think it's limitless if you start thinking about it that way, what we could offer on a site like that that people would then take home to help enhance and grow our dairy industry and radiate out from that. So I wanted to lay that as a base before we went any further, because frankly, I think since 2003 we've been talking about this, thinking about it. I think the time is right for this committee and our ag folks and our partners. And by the way, it will be partners. I think people get nervous, Minsku and the university, and rightly so in the legislature, thinking, oh my God, how are we ever going to fund something like this, you know? Well, number one, I would say this. It's about time we fund some stuff in agriculture, all right? We've been sitting in the back room, hanging out, watching everything else get funded. Agriculture is 20% of the state's economy, and we're doing quite well right now. Thank you very much. If we can get the rain to quit, get these crops out, thank goodness for agriculture. And now is not the time to back off, but move forward and enhance it even more. But number two, we're talking about partnerships. It isn't just the state or a particular college or something that would fund this. We have companies like Land O'Lakes and Kraft, and we have bottlers and others, Schroeder's and Kemp's, and we have DeVisco's, and we have Minnesota Milk Producers and the Co-op Association, everyone else that would have a stake in this and a real reason to put some funding behind it and become a partner on that site. And so I think if we think broadly enough and we get out of our little cubicles and our little silos we're in and think about how we might partner on a thing like this to make it a piece that everyone has a stake in, private, public, nonprofit, producers, farmers, and our communities, I think we're going to be successful if we move ahead with that type of attitude. So that's just the base, and I want to put that out. That's why you're here. And I think, again, if no matter who's governor, if we have a bonding bill moving forward, I would see a request for pre-design money for a facility like this, and then with the goal of getting any additional bonding monies needed in the actual bonding year, which would be 2 years from now when we actually do a larger bonding bill. But I think asking for pre-design money and having that as our goal to be ready for that in January, February of this year is doable. So
Representative Magnus, and then Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lefebvre, a couple questions. What's the size you're looking at here? How many head of livestock? I see you're looking at different breeds and so on. Have you got any idea, Bob, how that would kind of a number for us?
Mr. Lefebvre.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus. I want to qualify. This is something that Minnesota Milk did put together. Yeah. This is something that we believe, and I thank the committee, because what you did in that passing that piece of legislation last year is it's not just about Minnesota Milk and what Minnesota Milk wants. It's about getting together the entire dairy industry, everyone that has a stake in this, to come up with what they believe is going to be the best. And obviously dairy producers are a very important piece of that. So I want to give that qualification there. From our standpoint and where we're at this point, we believe that it's extremely necessary to be able to handle multiple research projects at one time, given today's state, if you will, given where we're at right now. We have to be able to do multiple studies, research studies. And in order to do that, we also need to be doing these research studies in groups. So you need to have enough groups in order to get the research done. We believe that a facility would need to be in a neighborhood of 1,000 cows, perhaps a little bit larger. It's not because of it's a large farm. We're doing this in order to have enough cows and enough research from the research standpoint in order for that to happen and move us forward. From the teaching standpoint, it's enough cows for these students can learn what's happening every single day. I guarantee you with that amount of cows, you're going to be calving every day. You're going to have some type of a problem every day, and that's how students learn, hands-on that way. So that's why we believe from our standpoint that it needs to be sized at least 1,000 cows.
Okay. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Lefebvre. And you mentioned in here an estimated cost of about $35 million, but I think also in that same paragraph you talk about the operating costs, which I think we need, certainly we're going to have to look at. You know, the upfront costs are one thing, but we as a legislature often fail to look at the continuing operating costs and how that shakes out. So I would suggest we look at, you know, that, and also look at if we're going to be a state-of-the-art and a research facility, I think, Mr. Chairman, we've got to look at the energy side of this too, and you know, not just the milk production and cheese and everything else, but we need to look at how we can do this. And so with that, just my suggestion, we, you know, have got other opportunities out there for partnerships, not only partnerships with dairy folks to build it and maybe help with some of the operating, but you can look at some of the funding that might be out there from the energy side too, Mr. Chairman.
I agree with you, Representative Magnus. Renewable energy should be a huge piece here.
We've got to look at partnership. If we're going to take this on, we've got to.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it gives us a chance to look at a lot of
methane digesters, to wind, to solar panels on the milk houses. You can start imagining what you can do with energy projects out there too, Representative Magnus.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, you and I were down to Cuba and yeah. We looked at the state of the art Cuban Fidel Castro farm there, and that was kind of interesting.
They fire a lot of those farms with solar down there because they don't have the infrastructure. Otherwise, these are modern facilities using solar. It was interesting. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lefebvre, you mentioned that dairy production is up, numbers of cows are up. Wondering what are the numbers doing as far as farms are concerned, up or down, and also jobs created by the dairy industry.
And I forgot to mention, First District will definitely be a partner in this too, Representative Erdahl.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah. Mr. Lefebvre.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, very good questions. First of all, unfortunately, we do continue to lose farms. The last 2 years have been extremely difficult. I think everyone is fully aware of the situation that dairy farmers have gone through. I would say this, given the extreme financial difficulties that were not caused by them, the shift in demand, if you will, by several factors, I think dairy farmers have been extremely resilient. That doesn't help put any money in their pocket and put food on the table. But I think that goes to, again, back to the fact that we're here to stay in Minnesota, and we're here to grow. Unfortunately, we have been losing some farmers. We have continued to increase in milk production and increase in cow numbers, both. And basically what we've seen, and again, this goes back to this committee in part, because of the livestock investment grant that you passed. I mean, there's a need out there. There continues to be reinvestment in dairy facilities, whether they're hard on the farmers that are milking the cows or hard on the cows themselves, you know, going to that. I mean, so that's why they're reinvesting and growing.
One of the issues, too, Representative Riddle, I think that's, and I don't know how we do it, Department of Agriculture's here, or they can think about this, but we talk about the number of dairy farms rather than the number of dairy farmers. And case in point is a farm we were at up between Wilmer and Sundberg, Pennock and Sundberg, the other day at our that's a brand new farm that was built with a father and then two sons, I believe. So now there's three families on that one farm. So we would see that as instead of three farms, there's one farm, and that would be a bad. But actually, there's three farmers and three farm families that are now on one site, and so our number of farmers didn't change. In fact, they maybe increased in that particular case. And so how do we track, you know, is number of farms a good method, or is it better like you're doing now with number of cows and total output, which is maybe more reflective on the number of people and jobs that are still involved with dairy out there?
That, Mr. Chair, very, very good point. You're right, because cows, you know, it's people that that we're really interested in, and that's a very good point. And today we have about 39,000 people that are employed because of the dairy industry. And if you take a look, you can extrapolate it one way. Our estimates are there's about 11,000 people working on the farm today.
Okay. Representative Myrtle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. LaFave, that was the second part of my question, number of farms, but also the number of people who are working in the industry. And is that number going up or down?
Mr. LaFave, number of jobs in dairy, up or down?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, the number of people who are employed as a result of the dairy industry, I would say, has been relatively stable over the last few years.
Okay. One.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final question. What is the average herd size now?
Mr. LaFave. If you don't know, we're going to bring
Mr.
the
Chair,
bring the department up and they'll tell us.
I'll say it's around 100 cows.
Okay. Why don't the Department of Ag come up now and give us an update on where we're at on the meetings and anything else you want to fill in? Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chair, too, if yes. I may, to Representative Magnus's point while Kurt's coming down here, on the capital and on the operating, you're absolutely right. And that's something that we have heard with the University of Minnesota in throughout our discussions. It's not just building it, it's the operation of it. And we're very confident that not if we're able to build it, you're able to build it, they will come. But no, if we're able to build it, the operational side of it will definitely take care of itself. We believe there's enough industry stakeholders that are ready to get moving on this that the partnership, the true partnership, will happen, and operationally it'll work as well.
And I think we have some models to look at. Obviously, Iowa and other states have some of these now, so certainly, you know, and it's probably a combination of you know, tuition from students and obviously milk sales off the farm. And, you know, there's a number of things that come into play as far as operation costs. Energy, perhaps we can actually make money on energy. Be interesting. Mr. Zimmerman, introduce yourself. And if you give us an update, I know you've held a couple meetings. Are we proceeding okay at this point? Are you going to be ready to go in January, February if we need to call on you for language, for a pre-design on something like this in a bonding bill?
My name is Kurt Zimmerman. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I'm the facilitator for the Dairy Research Education Consumer Outreach Facility Report. And I really appreciate, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, an opportunity to give you just a brief update. To answer several of your questions there right at the end, yes, I'd be happy to, and I look forward to it. From a standpoint of the status of the report, our goal at the department is to meet the deadline of February 1, meet the needs of the legislative request and your intent of passing that language, to give you a report that has some substance and helps to move the process to the next level. That's our goal. In July, approximately 25 dairy industry stakeholders were invited by Commissioner Hugesson to participate in this effort. This group represented dairy producers, processors in the state, dairy organizations, farm groups, education institutions, lenders, dairy supply equipment folks took part, and equipment representatives. We've had two meetings, as you mentioned, Mr. Chair. We had our first on August 18th. The document that Mr. Lefebvre talked about, that scoping document that was presented at Dairy Day at the Capitol here this past session, has been very helpful. We used some of that information. We also heard from the University of Minnesota in that initial meeting. One of the very first things that this group did, besides being strong supporters of the effort, was to develop a mission or a common vision of what they were trying to accomplish, which I thought was excellent. And I'd like to just very quickly read what their mission of putting this together is. Build and support a dairy research, teaching, and consumer education facility that meets the balanced needs of a dynamic dairy industry that combines market, community expectations for high-quality milk to be produced with minimal environmental impact and sensitivity for animal care. The facility will enable important future research and development into dairy animal nutrition, optimizing profitable production practices, ensuring cow comfort, health, and care while benefiting our natural resources and the people of Minnesota. It's a short statement, but it really says a lot about the efforts of what this group is trying to do. We had our second meeting last week. And we had that by conference call, and we divided the tasks of what we're trying to put into this report into five primary topics. The current status of our industry, Representative Erdahl, you asked some very specific questions about that. We wanted to make sure we had a very concise and clear Polaroid view of where we were as an industry. Bob Lefebvre indicated the growth. We're very pleased. There's only five states in the country that produce more milk than Minnesota. This is a very dynamic and huge part of our industry. 104 is the actual number of the actual size of each dairy in the state, and it is increasing as far as the size. But we look at number one's goal is to make sure we get a good view of our industry and also the education and outreach facilities that we have in the state and where we're serving our clientele. Second, we wanted to assess the need for such a facility and the benefits to all aspects. I think we can clearly see the benefits to our dairy farmers, but what is the benefit to our infrastructure? What is the benefit to the people that are in the Twin Cities area? Well, how are they going to benefit from this? What are the overall benefits of a project like this? Three is the facility locations. What are some potential locations and size models and how we operate this facility? Pretty important that we answer your question, Representative Magnuson, what kind of size makes sense, and if we're going to do proper research, how many animals would make the most sense and be the best from an efficiency standpoint in operation? Fourth, big part of the report is funding options. We need to gather as many opportunities and partnerships. There's already people on this group that have expressed an interest and have financially supported other facilities in other states that are saying this is the time for Minnesota to look at this. So that's the fourth area. The fifth is the consumer outreach piece. Processing research on farm. We talked about this at a meeting this morning. We had a conference call of this group about 2 hours ago. So the group is working. And I think the exciting part about this is not the two meetings that we had or the conference call. It's the emails and the conversations that are going on late at night, early in the morning. This morning's call, there were conversations that had went on the last 2 or 3 days that had nothing to do with an organized meeting. So the conversations have started, and we're excited about that. Next steps, we're having each of these five groups prepare a specific summary of their work, prepare it in a shortened, condensed version. We're going to get together the third week in October, compare notes, and from all of these five groups, we're going to prepare the first draft and then start the process of what are we missing, what do we need to enhance on, what do we need to eliminate. Does this make sense, members of the Ag Finance Committee? Are we on the right track? If we are, what do we need more? And then begin to the second phase of drafting and editing, and we hope to be able to get this information out for public review prior to having it completed in January and by February 1. So that's a quick overview of where we are as far as the work. I think we are on target, and we're going to have this prepared.
Good. Representative Otremba.
I'm wondering about goat milk. I get a lot of calls. And what are we doing about?
How about other milk besides cow milk? We have a exploding goat population, and people that not only eat the meat but use the milk in cheese production and drinking and other things in the state. Are you looking at those numbers, and would that be a possible add-on? I mean, and I like what Representative Otremba said. I think the way we start thinking about everyone that leaves this room, when you start thinking about this over the next few months, I think there's a lot of possibilities that we're not even talking about yet, which I think you're right. The offline conversations, the emails that go back and forth, the phone calls that happen beyond any formal meeting is what's exciting about this process. And the reason that we're having the meeting today and not January 1st is we want people to start interacting quickly on this and start throwing things your way. But, Mr. Zimmerman, did your group talk about other milk sources besides cows?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Otremba, I can say that the group that we've had together the first two meetings did not talk about it, I'll be honest. But I do want to make it clear, we have people at the Department of Ag that have spent more time with the goat dairy industry the last two or three years than all of the work we put into this project so far. So we are working extremely hard in helping serve those people who have lost their market outlet. We know that. Most of the dairy goat people in Minnesota right now are dumping their milk because they don't have an outlet for it. We're working with some marketing outlets. We're talking about dry milk facilities of drying that and being able to use that advantage to help overcome some shipping difficulties. That's a real challenge. There's an industry that grew so fast before the infrastructure and the market was there that we couldn't keep up with the supply we had. That's not the case with our dairy industry. We've got a strong infrastructure in place for dairy cow milk, and that's really the efforts that this group is focused on in our first meetings.
And Representative Otremba, you just brought the goats into the discussion, so thank you for that. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a comment I want to make on this, on a facility of this size, and that is to make sure that the research done is applicable to the average size farmers we have. You said 104 cows. Just an example, Representative Magnus brought up about industry and the energy type things. We know that the methane digesters work on large scale facilities, but I have a farmer in my district that has a 100 cow dairy herd trying to make a small digester work, and it doesn't work financially. So we need to not forget about the smaller farmers that need this research as well as the big farms as well, would be my comment.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson's excellent point. Just in the meeting this morning, the group that was talking about research, the types of research, balanced outreach, two of the areas that were talked about, we talked about the methane digesters and about right now the size model is geared more to a larger facility to make those work. However, two areas that were talked about just today by this group, nutrition research, feeding of byproducts to cows. If we had a larger facility, we could have various trials in the same type of facility, the same environment, the same type of everything except various nutrients, inputs going into cows. The benefits that research could have are meaningful to people if you're milking 40 or 80 or 100 or 2,800. The other area was cow bedding. If you have a large enough facility, you can look at various types of cow bedding. Sand is very popular, but is a real tiger as far as trying to control and use in various other things on the farm. That type of research really has benefits in a large setting, but also for a smaller producer who's looking at a different type of bedding. So some of these concerns over largeness are, I think, can be answered if we look at the type of research and if it does have benefits to smaller producers. But you make an excellent point.
Okay. Anything else for Mr. Zimmerman or the Department of Agriculture? All right, before we finish up on this, who else, anyone else want to come up? Here comes our co-op guy.
Former legislator
from Wisconsin. Former, he's one of us from Wisconsin. So welcome to the committee, and appreciate you being here. I think he's got a short little paper, if someone could help him hand that out. And introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Ward. I'm the Director of Dairy and Government Relations for the Cooperative Network, and we're the co-ops are the ones that process all the milk that's produced in Minnesota, make it into cheese, butter, and other dairy products that the citizens of Minnesota and other citizens.
Now remind us, when did you serve in the Wisconsin legislature and from where? What area of the state?
South central area of the state, Fort Atkinson, which is halfway between Madison and Milwaukee, and those of you familiar with dairy, Homa Hord's Dairyman, the Bible of the dairy industry.
So what years were you in?
1992 to 2006.
All right, very good.
So
all right.
I got out while the getting was good. So, again, thank you for the opportunity. And also want to, you know, some of the statistics that have been talked about on the growth of the dairy industry here in Minnesota were the result of this body and the Minnesota legislature in passing issues like the Livestock Investment Grant Program that's helped producers modernize their facilities, and the Dairy Profitability Enhancement Program, which assists dairy producers. So I think it's through your work in the previous sessions of this body that have brought the dairy industry in Minnesota to the point it is today. We look at the dairy research facility as that next step to kind of complete, make the Minnesota dairy industry reach its full potential. Some of the things that my comments on the sheet that's being handed out just kind of reiterate our support for the project, but some of the things that were talked about in the questions by previous speakers about employment in the dairy industry. The processing industry is stable employment right now, but it's because the downturn that we experienced years ago, we weren't investing in the processing industry. It was there, and we used it. Now that processing industry, because of the expanded milk supply, is reaching capacity. So we will see future employment growth within the processing industry as we need to find more processing facilities or expanded processing facilities to take care of the increased milk production. First District Association, one of our members in Litchfield, Minnesota, an example of that. They just went through a huge growth in their plant in Litchfield, aided by some work done by the legislature to help the Litchfield Wastewater Treatment Plant modernize. So, and Representative Erdahl, you're very familiar with that project. So the employment will, you know, as the dairy industry grows, this research facility we view will not only help train future dairymen, regardless of the size of their operations, but will also, and those dairymen now are being trained at other facilities in other states. The Northeast Iowa has a large number of Minnesota students. UW River Falls, I think over half their ag college is made up of Minnesota students. So the need is there to have something put in place here in the state of Minnesota. Question about the digesters and whether the size will work, this facility will work on smaller farms. You're right, digesters work on probably 750 to 1,000 cow operations. There is being work done in probably 750 to 1,000 cow operations. There is being work done in other areas of the country that will look at maybe reducing the number of size that will make a digester work, and maybe not have a complete digester, but just produce the gas and send the methane gas and send that to someplace to be used for other reasons, projects. And a community digester down in south central Wisconsin, there's a project going on about co-mingling waste from a number of farms in a digest. So these are things that can be utilized and learned and help make the dairy industry in Minnesota reach its full potential. So with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, and thanks for your input. And Department of Ag, make sure the co-op network is part of your group, too, as you're calling. We keep thinking there's other people, too, we think about that should be part of the groups that we didn't necessarily have in the initial group. So we want to make sure we get those people involved quickly, too. So, all right, thank you very much. Is there anyone else on the dairy that wants to come up and weigh in on anything? Otherwise, we're going to move to poultry. All right. U of M Poultry. And again, remember timelines on all this, too, members. When we talk about bonding, you know, if we were, let's say, a poultry facility or dairy facility or any of these veterans projects, if you're able to get pre-design money this coming year on any of these projects, then you're looking at asking for bonding money the next year, which is 2012. And we all know that, you know, most of that doesn't happen until midsummer. Most times construction would be another year out at that point in time. So even though we're talking about pre-design money next year, we're probably talking 2013 for a construction start date, and then construction takes a year or year and a half. So, I mean, that's why we're trying to plan now so that all of a sudden we don't get to the year 2012 or 13 and say, oh boy, we're Umoar Park's ready to go and now we haven't planned this or we're not thinking ahead far enough. So anyway, welcome, introduce yourself, and please proceed.
Greg Cuomo. I'm a Associate Dean for Extension and Outreach in the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences at the University of Minnesota. And I'm just going to try to give a little chronology of what's happened with the turkey facility at Umoar Park. Be happy to answer any questions. So in 1996, the Board of Regents gave approval for the development of university land in Rosemont, and that land is known as Umoar Park. Within Umoar Park, there are the university's turkey research facility, and that's at the Rosemont Research and Outreach Center, and that's managed by the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences. Umoar Park is actually managed by a different entity within the university. In principle, the university is committed to conducting research that addresses the needs of the turkey producers in Minnesota and to relay research through education and extension efforts. As the university began planning for the development project, we assured the turkey industry that there would not be a break in turkey research as a result of the Umoar Park development. With that in mind, we developed a pre-design for turkey research facilities with a team of university and industry partners, and the design had two primary components. The first was a primary research location at a remote location, and the second was a rehabilitation of some on-campus space. The facilities were designed with real-time technologies and interactive video to facilitate work between the two locations. In discussions with the Umoar Park development planners, it was agreed that the area where the turkey research facilities were located would not be mined or developed until after the useful life of the current facilities. This, and then assurances of using the latest mining technologies, some distant setbacks, establishment of berms and tree plantings to minimize the impact on dairy research, led the university to the decision to wait to develop the turkey research facilities. As a College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences and Extension, we're doing our best to effectively work through a time of declining resources. Our highest priority is for capacity. It's for people to do the research and education. With this, we're committed to maintaining open lines of communication with the turkey industry, and we'll continue to seek their input as we be sure to have high-impact research and extension efforts. So that's really where we are today.
So I didn't pick up on how long do you think that facility at Umoar Park will be functioning as a turkey research facility in its current state before you have to move it? What is it? One year, 3 years, 5 years?
As a result of mining and development, it's probably more than 30 years. So it's well past is a mining plan. It's all phased. It's in the last phase of mining in that area, and it will probably be beyond all of our careers, well past the time where we expect those facilities to be useful to us.
So you'll be able to go that indefinitely now on the same site you're at. Is that what you're telling us?
That's correct. Okay. The facilities will wear out before they mine the land or develop.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's news, because I hadn't heard that up till now, so that's good. Well, then we won't. So you're saying we won't have to worry about this one in bonding next year. You're going to have, again, and the reason we're asked about Turkey's members is because of the previous story where we heard they were going to have to relocate it. And number two, as we know, Minnesota is the number one producer and processor of turkeys in the land, and that is one industry. Again, me coming from Candiwai County and the home of Jenny O Turkey Store, we do not want to shortchange those people at all, and they tend to get a backseat too at times, not by the university, but by, frankly, the ag community when we're thinking through some of this stuff. So I just want to affirm that research facility will be there, be open, be staffed, well beyond what Magnus and Junkie and others can dream about right now.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, that's right, and I'll just have to say I was encouraged by your talk in the dairy facility about partnerships and how we work together and how we move forward, because I think that there will come a time where we need to be thinking about new turkey facilities. At this point, particularly in the economic times we're in, our greatest challenge as a university is to make sure there's people to do that work, both to be in those facilities but to do the research and extension work.
Yep, we appreciate that. Any question for the turkey guy? Representative Shemansky.
I guess you got my interest now. Mr. Cuomo, or Dean Cuomo, as far as, did they do research on breeding birds as well as, feeding and processing? Just give me a little background on how much research is going on.
Yep. Chairman Junkie, Representative Shemansky in the committee. We have two in the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences. We have two primary faculty members who work in turkey. One of them is a reproductive physiologist, Muhammad El Halawani, and the second does more nutrition and management work with extension efforts, and that's Sally Knoll. There's also a fairly concentrated effort within the College of Veterinary Medicine.
Representative Shemansky.
The reason I ask is in the news earlier this week, there was talk of genetically modified salmon going into production, and I'm wondering if we're genetically modifying turkeys yet.
How big will that turkey get?
You have to be careful, Mr. Yep. Chairman, Representative Shemansky. I have to be careful that I don't profess to be an expert in things I know nothing about, so I think I'll defer to on that question. Do you comment?
I'm sure there's probably genetic studies going on, but not that route, I assume.
Genome has been sequenced last year.
Okay.
Research from the University of Minnesota.
Okay. So we have sequenced the genome. That's interesting. So that will progress in a lot of ways, research, once you have that mapping project done. So, all right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, it's about time. 2 o'clock is the time we need to be at the University of Minnesota. We have about 3 hours planned program there for staff, Senate staff, anyone else that's interested. I mean, let AJ know if you want to go along out there, even if you're not staff or member. I'm sure we can find a spot for you to join us. If that interests you, we're going to look at a number of their indoor facilities, their horse facilities. If it's not raining, we may get out to see some of their plots. For those that want to carpool, there's some interest in carpooling, and we'll come back. Meet up by my office, say at about 20 to 2. 20 to 2 if you want to carpool. Who's ever there will go. Otherwise, there's directions here coming in from the north side on Larpinder, where you go, what streets to look at, and you will have at about around 2 o'clock, we'll be standing there with parking tags, so you can park right out by the barns and the buildings that we'll be at. So, and again, we'll feed you dinner about 5 o'clock, for those of you that weren't here earlier. Then you're welcome to go home, or if you have a distance to travel and are staying overnight, we're happy to pay your travel day, either for yesterday or tomorrow, if you're staying overnight. So just fill out your blue sheets and get them into our office. And so either way, we hope you can be there. We hope you enjoy dinner. And if you want, don't rush home. If you've got some things you got to pick up in your office in the morning, we'll pay for that too. So, all right. Any questions, comments? Representative Shemansky. Ron Burns will be standing in the rain with an umbrella, and that's the guy you look for when you pull in. He'll have your parking tag. So, again, 20 to 2 if you want a carpool. Representative Shemansky.
That was my question, if we're going to be outdoors needing umbrellas. Or
If it's raining, are we okay with just light jackets and coat? We're not going to be standing in the rain?
No.
Okay. They've got it planned so that we'll either be enclosed in a vehicle or indoors, and it'd be quick in and out, so it won't be anything you'll need cover for. Any other questions? Any other business? Ms. Cheney, you have an announcement you want to give us a little quick update here for 1 minute? We always like to get you before the committee whenever possible. So everyone prepare your questions. We've got a lot of time till 2 o'clock.
Now. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, Quinn Cheney, on behalf of the Board of Animal Health today, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to let you all know that this morning the Board of Animal Health announced that the USDA has upgraded most of Minnesota to TB-free starting in October. So it's been about 5 years since we've detected the first 5 years since we detected the first case of bovine TB in Minnesota, and 2 years since we have been free of any infections.
Very good. That's good news, and it's good news for our beef folks, so they can start moving and producing and not have that extra burden. So, all right, thank you for that. That'll be in the news. You'll see that reported in your farm news outlets in the coming week. Anything else to come before the committee by anyone? All right. Thank you for coming, and we are adjourned.